Super apps are the most popular apps in the software ecosystem. And many of them have billions of users or hundreds of millions of users. They're used around the world and they're coming to the West. Telegram is transforming into a super app in front of our eyes. And X.com, their stated mission is to become a super app. So it's going to become much more common in the West. But in Asia and other parts of the world, it's already, these are by far the most common apps. And every single one of them are incredibly centralized. We need to put that power into the hands of any community anywhere to be able to run.
This rip of TFTC was brought to you by River. It's the best place to buy Bitcoin. Go to river.com/TFTC and enjoy this episode.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
OB, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Too long.
It has been too long. You're just telling me you've had a week since launch. Euphoria is coming down back to reality. It was a long sprint.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, this is the phase in the three phases of a ambitious startup. This is the phase that I enjoy the most. The first phase is the second most fun, I guess. And so the three phases are initialization. That's like building the car for the race and dragging it up to the finding the driver or the crew to man it and then dragging it up to the start line. And then there's the market product fit, which is where it's the early stage of the race where you're vying for position and you're finding your racing line and you finally get a formula that works and you're lapping people and you're just catching up and you know that something's working. And then there's growth, where you're just extending your lead is the final phase. But the growth phase is a lot of people enjoy that, but as for me, that's the easiest phase because you've now got your rhythm, you've got your team, you're cooking on gas, literally, and you're just extending you're just increasing your lead on a lap by lap basis. This is the point where you're discovering market product fit, this phase we're in right now. And the phase that just finished Tuesday last week on the August 6th, 2024, was the initialization. We started with Eric, Justin, and myself with literally an open source project, which was incredible, and a dream, but no company. And we went from there to forming a company, getting an incredible group of investors, and then finding this incredible sort of Avengers-like team to actually make this dream become a reality. And then over the last 2 years, we've been working with communities around the world to refine and listen and refine and never give up, not number go up, never give up until we actually achieved our goal, which is a functioning super app, not run by a centralized entity in Silicon Valley or Beijing, China, but actually run by communities for communities where the source is available, eventually open source, and all of the elements are using freedom technologies.
Yeah, and I think you're being really humble in your description of building a startup, because you're not only building a car, but the internal combustion engine that's going to make that car go is being built in parallel as well. In your case, the Fedimint open source protocol. And so what was it like in the lead up to last week, sort of getting Fedi ready to be launched as the Fedimint protocol was being developed? Because this is, I think, a proof of concept came out in the summer of 2021. Eric really leaned into it. in 2022, post-Bitcoin 2022. And so for the last 2 years, we've had that open source project get developed, and earlier this year get to a point of stability where version 1.0.0 was launched, and you actually have a viable, stable protocol to build on. So what was it like for you and the team?
It's actually interesting because Fedi, the company, is two things. It's the app and it's the team that's behind it that works with communities. But if we're talking about the app itself is this sort of integration point for a number of freedom technologies. One of the most central is custody, community custody. And that's how we can scale custody to a community level. If you can individually custody, self-custody is always the best, but it's still challenging for many people to be able to do that. And so it leaves people hoarding their money in these very centralized custodial offerings with millions and millions of users. We felt that there was something in the middle, and that came out with the idea of community custody, where trusted members of a community could custody on behalf of their family, because it could be like Uncle Jim's and Auntie Jane's, or their group of friends, through to their club and football team, up to their village or town or company or organization. And if you do it that way, and use the community as the unit, we could have this gap between the ideal Bitcoin standard of self-custody and the current standard, the actual on-the-ground standard, which is, what is it, a dozen centralized entities where everybody are custodying their Bitcoin. And instead, you could have a scenario where you can have tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of these community custodial pack offerings. And you get these other benefits because it inherently uses eCash. It was the first eCash protocol backed by Bitcoin. You get privacy, simplicity, and so on. But that's not the only freedom technology we had to integrate into Fedi. Of course, we had to integrate Bitcoin and to connect these different federations, communities to the rest of the Bitcoin ecosystem. We had to integrate Lightning. And then to extend functionality further, we realized very early when we started getting feedback from communities that they needed a way to communicate with each other within the system. And that was also privacy preserving from the get-go and focus on one-to-one communication in the main. So again, we started with XMPP, if you want to know the technical terms for the audience, was the protocol that we used initially, and it was a very popular protocol. But after a while, we realized that we wanted something that was more easily federated and more naturally encrypted. So we moved over to Matrix. And we then went further. We needed a mechanism to have identity. So we integrated support. We've only got the basic, but every single user of Fedi automatically gets an NSEC and NPUB, i.e. they get a Nostr identity. And we can use that to integrate with the Nostr ecosystem. And we keep going on and on and on, identifying freedom technologies that have reached maturity that add value and merge them all together into one application, which is now source available and will eventually be open source as well. So that we have these technologies, and it requires all of them. This is what was the big insight. It requires all of them to be in one offering for really magic to happen. If you miss some of these elements, you don't have the complete picture, which is something that can be used by everybody everywhere.
Yeah, when you really think about it, like the fundamental properties of a bank, and particularly a community bank, like it's not only custodying, sending, receiving money, it's things like communication, coordination, getting people together. And so this is, in my mind, something that's truly sci-fi when you talk about like innovation in fintech. This is something that is truly unique and new to the space, where you're not depending on any incumbent financial system or banking rails to provide banking services to individuals around the world. You've built it from scratch, which is no easy task.
I have to always doff my virtual cap off to my team to make that happen. Because I said, we had an idea. Many people thought, Eric was mentioning that some of the people that he knew in the cypherpunk circles were saying that this would either never be built or it'll take about a decade to do. So the fact that we did it in 2 years is a testament to an incredible team. I remember that Justin, when we had these sort of, especially early on, would go on these sort of deep coding sessions, and he would take his Karate Kid red sash, stick it around his head, and go into coding mode to just make something real that shouldn't really have been real, you know, and basically make magic happen. So now we have a product that has all of the MVP features. It has a global chat, and eventually that'll be federated. It has federated Charmian eCash Mint capability, FediMint. It connects to the Lightning Network. It can be upgraded in two ways. It can be upgraded with something called FediMint modules, where you can really add deep functionality across a community, for example, stable balances and social backup and so on, and other features like this that will be coming. And it could be upgraded on an individual basis, i.e. the equivalent of apps, but we call them FediMods. These are basically specialized web pages or web apps. And anyone can build these. Many of them exist already. And this, again, because of the last several years of work in the Bitcoin ecosystem, there are a number of incredible websites that solve problems. Bitrefill allows you to buy gift cards from around the world. BTC Maps allows you to find Bitcoin establishments from all over the place. Unleash.chat allows you to access AI, Stacker News, and Primal allows you to access the entire Nostr ecosystem. And all of these support things like Nostr for logging in and so on, or WebLN for payments via Lightning. And because all these standards are now out there, we can easily integrate these and upgrade the Fedi app because of the work of thousands of other people from around the world.
This episode was presented by River. River is the best, most secure place to buy Bitcoin in the United States. Go to river.com/TFTC, set up an account today. You'll be able to DCA into Bitcoin without paying any fees. You'll be able to give people Bitcoin via River links. You'll be able to send and receive Bitcoin over the Lightning Network. And you'll be able to set limit orders. If you want to buy Bitcoin at a particular price, below or above where it is now, you can set orders to buy Bitcoin when it hits that price. Go to river.com/TFTC. Set up your account today. This trip was also brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Unchained is building a financial services platform for a Bitcoin standard. They have over 7,000 clients that are securing over 90,000 Bitcoin with 12,000 keys on their platform. Their platform leverages Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. Their cornerstone product is their vault product, a 2 of 3 multi-sig vault, which allows you to hold 2 of 3 keys in a multi-sig quorum. That gives you full control over your Bitcoin. They also have an IRA product, a lending desk, and they're rolling out a bunch of other products, including an inheritance protocol and sound advisory. So go to unchained.com, set up a call with their concierge onboarding team today, tell them that TFTC sent you, and use the promo code TFTC at checkout. Unchained.com.
Yeah, we often talk about the beauty of Bitcoin's interoperable nature, not just at the protocol level, but at the Lightning layer now with these Charmian mints, whether it's the FediMint protocol or Cashew, like they're all interoperable. And then you think of things like Nostr, the interoperability between all these different disparate protocols is something that people still, even within Bitcoin, don't really grasp the gravity of what can be done. Like, that example that you just walked through there is like somebody can upgrade an application or a protocol somewhere else, and Fedi can easily implement that and make the Fedi app better.
Yeah, a perfect example is Unleash.chat. And I, it was announced a month or so ago. And it's a cool app, very focused. You can connect to these open source large language models and use them to ask questions and so on, but knowing that they're not under the control of some centralized Silicon Valley entity, for example. And as when it came out, I just took my phone, I I added a Fedi mod. I put in the URL for unleash.chat, and the mod was automatically created. I renamed it to just unleash.chat, and I had a mod. But then when I clicked on the mod, I noticed it had login via Nosta. I clicked on that, and the Fedi mod recognized that the person was trying to log in via Nosta, used the Nosta ID that it automatically created for me when I installed the app. And I was logged in. I didn't have to go off to a different app or do anything. And then I needed to credit the unleash.chat with some Bitcoin to be able to use the services. I again went to credit. It showed an invoice and it says connect to app and connect to wallet. And I clicked on that. And again, the Fedi app recognized that I was trying to log in to deposit money into this mod. And it popped up a box saying, do you want to transfer these amounts of sats? And I clicked yes. And eCash privately and simply was converted to Lightning, went over the Lightning network and credited it. And a few seconds later, I saw the balance. And this was an app which was built, and there had been no interaction between NBK and myself on this. It was a great app. I just gave it a go, and it just worked. And even better, we've also seen services and websites and mods which have great functionality but didn't quite integrate support for WebLN or LNURL or Nosta correctly. And they haven't had that many people using them. And then what would happen is we would add support, or in one community, they would ask for this service and they would give feedback to the maker of that website that this is not working, and they would fix that because of the fact that we're on the ground actually working with communities who want to use these features beyond just playing around with them, but really actually want to use them. They start giving you feedback. So we effectively become this outsourced business development, marketing, user experience center for the rest of the Bitcoin ecosystem.
Yeah, and this is actually a good segue into one of the questions I'm most curious to hear your response to, which is, having worked with communities on the ground over the last 2 years to figure out exactly what they need, like what were some of the most surprising needs that you found and had to build for, or what, did you go in with particular expectations and then come out with, oh, actually we need to focus here?
So I think there's a lot. One, we are building an app for everybody everywhere, but because of the history of where we came, and when you're building a business, you start with a market that you know how to reach and you have an unfair advantage of how to reach. And we did that. The network of people that we have on our team have incredible relationships within the human rights defender community, humanitarian community, and globally in various communities around the world. So communities was our superpower in terms of connections. And many of these communities need solutions to problems, and Bitcoin and the freedom technologies around it solve that problem. Sometimes they're aware that they can solve the problem, but it's too complex. Sometimes they're not, but they start with, we have a need, and can you help solve that need? As opposed to, we have a want to use this technology, and we'll figure out an actual needed services later. And so one of the things that we realized very early on is the level of integration. There's solutions all over the place that solve their problems, but they really want a one-stop shop which brings them all into one place. And that's at the beginning we were struggling, do we just make it a wallet or do we add in other features and so on? And it became clear that we want to add in features like chat and upgradability because of feedback from users. And so early on, that wasn't something we were clear about, but when we saw the delight on their eyes, where within a chat, they can just send payments or they can integrate with these mods, which they could have done separately. You could say, well, why don't I just open up a web browser and Why not also have a different app that connects to the web browser? And why not just switch between the screens? But when people want to get stuff done, they don't want that friction of switching between multiple different apps. They want it to be integrated. So that was the first, the desire to be integrated. It's not a technology. It's the combination of multiple technologies in one place seamlessly. And we've started that journey, but that journey is going to continue for the for several months to come as we make it even more slick, this integration. The next thing that became clear was the need for, again, when you're dealing with people who you're trying to expand the number of people using Bitcoin, you realize that people who don't know about Bitcoin, et cetera, will need more than just the technology. The human element, we call it the Fedai Order and the Fedai Council, this human element is as important as the technological element. Often people just focus on the technology and they don't realize that people will need support and help. If you think about the iPhone, why is that different from an Android phone? Because you have things like the Apple stores and the Genius bars that you can go to. So the normal user, the mass market, feels comfortable that they can use this incredible piece of technology, but if there's something that they don't understand, there is a place to go to. Whereas if you're using Android, now at this stage, it's progressed. People can understand how to use it. But for the first 1 to 2 to 3 years, that was the killer advantage of the iPhone. So it's again, the second thing we learned, that the human element in many of these areas is absolutely essential. And that's hard to build because it's about relationships. It's about trust. And you have to build that for people to be able to switch, especially from other solutions that they already know. Then there were truths that we were probably aware of, but we didn't want to admit as Bitcoiners. And after a while of hearing it again and again and again, we realized that there was some need to stabilize the value of Bitcoin for short periods of time. Long-term, we know it's impossible to stabilize the value of any asset for forever. And in fact, even for fiat, fiat attempts to do it and it does it for a long period of time. And then it generally has some sort of catastrophic failure because of trying to do an impossible thing. But for short periods of time, for a month or two, when people are receiving money from family, for example, or from aid agencies, and that money is to buy this amount of food for the month, and that amount of food is priced in the local currency, they want to make sure that a short-term reduction in price doesn't mean that by 10%, doesn't, like that happened last month, for example, we saw a 10, 20% reduction in the price of Bitcoin. That would mean if people were on a Bitcoin standard for that month, they would have 10% less food, 10% less accommodation, 10% less fuel for their car, 10% less medicine for their children or elderly parents, which would mean that many people would have literally been in dire straits as a result of that. But what we observed is the communities that don't have disposable income, who or don't have large amounts of disposable income, who are using stable balances, actually were able to continue on and weren't affected. And so again, that product came very early on as something that we realized was being asked for again and again by communities. And we started working on that over 18 months ago. It was actually came out of a hackathon originally. And we then took over the code and because it was open source and improved it and made it production ready, because making something that works in a hackathon and making something that's production ready that you would have people use real money is a very different thing. That's a 12 to 24, 36 month journey to go from proof of concept to reality. And so that, so we worked on that quietly behind the scenes, and it's now pretty fault tolerant and pretty bulletproof. So I could go on and on about the uncommon knowledge, the need for integrating everything, the need for including chat, the need for having some stable solution. But as Bitcoiners, we wanted a solution that didn't involve, if possible, adding on a third party asset backing, because that would introduce a centralization vector again. And we wanted to always give the power to communities to do. So yeah, this, I could give you another 10, but those are a few.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, the last time we talked, maybe like a year, year and a half ago now at this point, you were describing what the ambitions of what you're trying to build at Fedi as the open source WeChat, the power app of the world. And it seems like you guys are pretty damn close to that, or you're there having launched. And I think this is a good point to talk about how this is an alternative to what people are doing right now. Like, what does this replace for these communities that you've been working with for the last couple of years?
So one example, it depends on the community, but one example is RepUnite. They work with communities around the world. They can reunite, as the name suggests, refugees with their loved ones. But they also work with communities and often refugee communities, and to provide aid and then help them user aid. They very quickly and very early cottoned on to the realization that community was key. And before even Fedi existed, they were starting to work in a community context. They worked with communities and they would deliver aid, and then they would work with trusted members of those communities to report back on how the aid was used, to suggest ways in which the aid would be used locally, and then handle the detail on the ground locally. This was a realization, and it's sort of common sense, that people who are local and trusted are going to be able to react quicker than someone who's remote. They're going to be likely react more accurately than someone who's remote. But they would need tools to help them. So they started building tools in-house with more limited resources than us, and they used a combination they realized they needed to have conversations happening. So they built some stuff on WhatsApp with bots and so on. They also needed a way for people to hold money and so on. So they started using Bitcoin to send, and Bitcoin wallets that were managed by members of the community. They would have wanted to use multi-sig or some sort of federated model, but that was too complicated to use the solutions out there for these communities. So one person would have a normal wallet in that community, and there would just be a convention that it would not be spent by that one person unless multiple people agreed. So they smoke and mirrored sort of some sort of multi-sig offering as well. And then they would have different web pages or different apps for specific use cases and specific purposes. They would also find and locate people to help on and off, on-ramp and off-ramp Bitcoin to local currency as well. And so what would end up happening is there's this big training overhead to bring people up to speed, because they had to use these different apps and different services and a lot of complexity to be able to service and manage that. Then along comes Fedi, and in one app, they could do every single thing that they wanted to do, and better and more integrated. And so it was basically obvious that this was the solution for them. And that was in a very early stage. I think we were working with them when we were just going to alpha, like they were some of the earliest clients. So that's just an example where having it all integrated in one place solves a key problem. Also working with communities on the ground as well to train them and bring them up to speed, again, solves a key problem. For other people, in certain communities, privacy is quite important. Privacy of communication and privacy of money is important. I won't go into more detail than that, but that's useful for certain communities, especially people who are living under the yoke of authoritarian regimes. And in other communities, it was the coordination element, the community savings and spending. So we saw these in Togo, for example, is an area where we're working with farming cooperatives and they're able to organize and collectively hold money. This collective savings is a very, very common functionality and feature. And what's exciting about us is these organizations or communities have different problems. They have problems with internet access. They have problems with complexity, language translation. But here's the thing. Once you solve those problems in the rest of the world, they are equally applicable in the West. Yes, we have very good internet, but not everywhere. If you're at a busy concert or if you're underground on a subway, you might have for short period of times no internet. You can still do an e-cash transaction in certain circumstances in those scenarios. Or if you're just somewhere where internet is a bit more flaky and not so reliable, because of the work we've done working in these edge case extreme environments, it means that our app will tend to operate better than an app that's been built in the West, designed for the West, and assumes perfect gigabit internet and the latest and greatest smartphone and or tablet and nothing in between. Those ones will work in the West, but they will never work in the rest of the world. If you can work in the rest of the world, you automatically are guaranteed to work in the West as well.
Quick break here, freaks. This rip is brought to you by Gradually Then Suddenly, a framework for understanding Bitcoin as money by Parker Lewis. I wrote the foreword to the book. I'm honored to have done so because it's the best 0-to-1 primer if you're looking for a logical explanation of why Bitcoin obsoletes all other money. Buy one for yourself and maybe a few for your friends. Go to thesafehouse.com/gradually. That's thesafehouse.com, safe spelled S-A-I-F, thesafehouse.com/gradually. Use the promo code TFTC for $5 off at checkout. Buy it now, freaks. The price of Bitcoin is going up. You need to understand it. This is the best 0-to-1 primer. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that currency runs on are a risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores, connect your wallets or custodial accounts, and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC, $40 off.
That's what we were discussing before we hit record, is like designing for these extreme edge cases really forces you to build the most robust product possible. And with that in mind, with the launch happening last week, what is your approach post-launch to figuring out how to improve the product and get it in the hands of more people?
Yeah, so this is the exciting time. We've got a few things, different things we're doing. We continue to work with these communities that we've worked with already and we've built strong relationships with and are giving us incredible feedback. And we already have a long list of features. So, I mean, we really appreciate people commenting and giving us feedback. It's likely that 9 out of 10 of the things that come back will already be on our list of things to add or improve, but we're always looking out for that 1 out of 10. So please keep it coming. But we're going to continue to work with them. The other thing we're going to do is continually make it easier and easier and easier for people to set up their own federations. And that's the key thing for us. Whether you want to set it up for your family or for your community or anything in between, or your company or anything in between, we want to make that easier and easier and easier, because we think that that will lead to a level of innovation that we have no visibility on. It might be a community anywhere in the world. They'll set up a federation. They set up just for that community. It could be private and have no no online footprint, but only the people who will know about it will be the people in the community. Or it could be a public federation that you want to have as this public good that is for anyone to use. We're interested to see what people do with that. And if we see people doing that organically and there's a use case that gains adoption, we'll lean into that and support that with resources and effort and time. And the other thing that we're very keen to do is see people building more FediMods and or taking their existing websites or web apps, and either they will, 8 times out of 10, they'll just work or out of the box, they'll just work as a FediMod. But sometimes with an hour or so of tweaking, they will work better. And generally, the improvements make the app better or the web app better overall. Adding in WebLN support is just a good thing to do. It means that Albie and all these other services will work. Adding in support for Nostr logins is just a good thing to do. So we're always looking to make sure that when you add support for Fedi, you're automatically making your offering better for yourself and therefore for the community. So working with existing humanitarian human rights defenders communities, disempowered communities, to continue to get feedback from these edge cases, as you say. Well, these edge cases represent billions of people, by the way, but still, from a Western perspective, they're edge cases. And also making it really easy for people to set up their own federation. That's going to be an iterative process. And then with all of this, feedback from people organically setting up their own federations, feedback from the communities that we're working closely with, feedback from people building mods, we will then take the feedback and adjust the product, improve and improve and improve. And it will just get better and better and better until one day some community somewhere looks around and realizes that a large percent, over half of their transactions in a monthly basis for their community are happening on Bitcoin rails in one way or another, whether it's a main chain, eCash, Lightning, or otherwise. And when that happens, we know we've hit the milestone for market product fit, and we switch to the next phase, which is growth, where we'll just see what's working and just lean into it and until we won't stop until we pass 1 billion users.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier this week. It seems like the point at which people in meat space don't need to convert Bitcoin to dollars and then go spend at a merchant. Yeah. Like once those merchants adopt, and it's just like Fedi app to Fedi app, Bitcoin to Bitcoin, whether it's eCash, Lightning, on chain, that will be a critical tipping point and moment where it's like, all right, this thing is running wild.
That's the market product fit. And there's many hypotheses as to how that can happen. It doesn't really matter which one it is. We're exploring the ones that seem from the last 18 months to have the most excitement. They're the ones that have got people like Save the Children excited and Rep Unite and so on. But we're also really excited to have this Cambrian explosion where we just make it easy for anybody to serve a federation. It's already quite easy. It's just going to get easier and easier over the next 3 or 4 months now that we're able to focus in on it. My vision, my sort of crazy idea would be you should be able to at some point be able to click a button and create a federation, you know, or if you already have the hardware, download an app and just click and it will just create. And we know technically how to do that, and every month that goes by, the hope is it just gets easier and easier towards that goal, so that it becomes less and less of an excuse to run a federation. And if you run a federation, that's the beginning of running other stuff in a self-running way. So you'll start with that community custody, but then you can imagine people start taking on Lightning node operation and Bitcoin node running as well is something that is related to running a federation. And more of this infrastructure becomes decentralized with basically the Fedimint servers being the sort of patient zero of these decentralized hardware and services.
Yeah, with that in mind, there's a lot of preconceived notions, particularly from the Western perspective. It's like, I find it hard to believe that people are going to do this, but I think if anything, in emerging markets, people have really proven, like, if they need to get something done, they will get it done. And they, again, in these extreme edge cases, the individuals find a way to make things work. And so on that thought, like, what are some other preconceived notions from the Western world as you build this product targeted firstly for emerging markets that may be a blind spot that people don't really recognize or realize?
There are many, but one that just immediately came to mind when you said it was, and this was a big insight for me as well. I mean, I'm like a child of two worlds. My family came from Nigeria. I grew up in the UK. I traveled backwards and forwards between the two. So I like to think that I have a foot in these two worlds. But even then, I was completely blind to this one. Namely that in the West, especially the communities that we're in the Bitcoin community, people understand concepts like stacking sats. They understand the importance of having disposable income and savings, and Bitcoin as a savings technology inherently. So we are actually, even in Western terms, where most of the West is very consumerist and doesn't focus enough on savings, we're already like an unusual subset of that. And so if you have disposable income and you understand the importance of savings and investment, then your relationship with money is going to be, first, money is a store of value, because I have value to store, so I'm going to see it as a store of value first. Second, it's a medium of exchange. But again, if you have value to store, you probably are likely to have a plethora of payment options. You have more than you know to count, but you're going to have Visa, PayPal, Diners Card, Amex. You're going to have MasterCard and Venmo, and you're just going to have a ton of options. And many of them are actually, even though behind the scenes is this sort of like Rube Goldbergian machine of different companies. From your point of view, you just literally take your phone nowadays and or a piece of plastic and tap it on some machine and the payment's made. It's literally one tap to pay for most people. And so money as a medium of exchange, your experience of it is only a short amount of, if you take all those taps over the period of a month, you probably actually are transacting and going through the process of transacting for minutes a month, maybe 2 or 3 minutes a month when you add all those taps up together. Whereas you're thinking about it as a store of value for almost all the month. And then finally, store of unit of account, i.e. how you measure prices and thinking about prices. Unless you're buying a house or a car, you're generally not really thinking about money as a unit of account. If you have savings and so on, if you think about the times when you buy a cup of coffee from various places, you probably don't know how much you paid for the coffee. You just didn't even think about the unit of account. You just checked, was it one unit, or was it 2 units? Was it under $10? Then I don't really care the price, you know, because you have enough wealth to just not even think about money as a unit of account. So number one by far, store of value, because you have value to store. Because of technology, you spend a little bit thinking about money as a medium of exchange in your monthly living, and almost no time thinking about it as a unit of account. Unless you're literally buying a house, then you'll be thinking about the price and negotiating about thinking about price. Now, the moment that you are in a disempowered community and you have no disposable income, it literally flips. And that was the insight. Your first thought is not store of value, because you have no value to store. So if you have no value to store, you can't start thinking about do I use an ETF or not, or do I do some sort of staking or a yield? You can't think about that because that requires you, or even trading or investing in NFTs or inscriptions. All of that requires disposable income to be able to do that. And so 99.9% of what people work on in the West is not relevant to anybody who does not have any disposable income, which is billions of people. So store of value, you spend the least amount of time thinking about, not the most. Your second, you spend much more time on medium of exchange, because you might do the same number of transactions in a month. You're buying food, accommodation, and so on, but you have way less and way less efficient payment options. You might be using cash way more often, which means that if I want to buy something, I can't just go online and pay. Or if I do get to the shop, when I buy it, I don't just tap to pay. I have to go into my wallet, find the coins, find the change, and then pass it to the merchant. And then they give me the change. I receive the change. I count it. So actually, the actual medium of exchange interaction is a larger percentage of your month because you have less efficient tools to do it. So you spend more time thinking about it as a medium of exchange. And then finally, again, if you are someone who has no disposable income, slight movements in price or prices going up or down have a massive effect to you. So every single purchase you're making, you're thinking about the price. If you're buying a coffee, you think about the price of the coffee. And this is not just the global South. This empowers communities everywhere in Midwest, United States, or Northern UK, or the outskirts of Paris. It will be the same. If you have no disposable income, you're going to be consumed about units of account. How much is the price of this? How much is the price of that? I have the budget. Can I afford it? Is my money going to reach the end of the month? So you're spending most of your time thinking about unit of account in your local currency, not in Bitcoin, not in USD. In your local currency, you're thinking about unit of account. You're spending most of the time thinking about medium of exchange, because medium of exchange is much less efficient. You don't have this smorgasbord of payment options, and the ones you do have are way slower. If I haven't got enough cash, I have to go and walk to my bank and withdraw cash and come back out. You know, so again, it takes, I spend a lot of time thinking about it as a medium of exchange, and I spend the absolute least time thinking about it as store of value. And that's the big thing. The moment you don't have disposable cash, your relationship with money does a 180 overnight. And that was a big insight for us. And a lot of the things that we built around that are as a result of that. And if you're in the West and you don't have that realization, a lot of the things that are needed to get Bitcoin to be used as a medium of exchange would just be invisible to you. They're beyond your sphere of ability to perceive, because you're living in a world where disposable capital is the norm. And so you have to sort of mentally think, imagine I had no disposable cash. Can I empathize and mentally intuit that world? And if you do, you'll realize that a lot of the products and offerings that you have to give have to be the diametric opposite of what they are in the West. Just one example, you want to be able to convert Bitcoin to fiat and fiat to Bitcoin. In the West, the predominant conversion that you're interested in as a consumer is fiat to Bitcoin. You want to buy Bitcoin, you want to stack sats. But in a world where you have no disposable income, then what generally is happening is you're receiving Bitcoin from friends, from family, from abroad, the diaspora, from aid agencies, and the predominant conversion is going from Bitcoin to fiat. You just want to quickly convert it into fiat so you can buy the stuff that you need to buy. So it's literally, as a result of that difference, disposable income or not, your relationship just on conversion becomes immediately flipped. So that was a big insight and a lot. We're still digging into what it means in terms of the interface, but we think that insight is a key part of us of finding the solution for Bitcoin being used as a medium of exchange.
Yeah, thinking about what you just said in the product that you're bringing to market, particularly like stability pools, do you think on the unit of account side, being able to give communities in emerging markets of the world, like these dollar stability pools, like that is one step in the right direction where they're not making the conscious decision of, all right, how many Naira do I have? How many Vietnam Dong do I have? You give them a dollar saving account that's backed by Bitcoin with these stability pools, and that is a step in the right direction where they get the they get the peace of mind, like, oh, I have a dollar savings tool now that I didn't have before. And even though the dollar is inflating and our monetary policy isn't as responsible as many would like it to be, it's impossible to ignore that out of all the fiat currencies, it is relatively the most stable.
Yeah, but it's interesting, even that might not be far enough. And again, this is part of the insights. But a dollar savings tool, naturally you think, yeah, we want stable coins, USD stable coins and so on. But actually, we are seeing that there could be more of a demand for local currency stable assets. Well, why would I want that? I mean, USDs, why would I want the local currency? Because for me, in this world, my unit of account is not USD. USD is just as alien to me as Bitcoin. And this is where, you know, so we're not going far enough. But then you think, well, but it inflates far worse. Well, okay, so I need to educate people about Keynesian versus Austrian economics. And so, no, I just want to pay for my groceries. And I need the currency that's in the prices are in my country, which is why, for example, you can't do that with a fiat-backed stablecoin. You just can't do that because fiat-backed stablecoins require fiat banks. And Tether is not even willing to hold the money in a European bank. You know, they're pushing back in Europe, let alone hold it in a Botswana bank account and so on. You can only do that with something like stable balances. And each community needs to do that for their own community. But what can be done, though, is because it's backed by Bitcoin, you could potentially hedge that against USD. And therefore, that delta could be potentially given back to the user in a form of effectively they have a local currency, but with some level of interest. So they almost now have not just a community custody solution, but they have an interest-bearing account almost for themselves. And that's subconsciously and psychologically way more intuitive than a USD account, which is in a currency that there's 642.5 Kenyan shillings to the US dollar. And I need 2,500 Kenyan shillings for my groceries. What is that in US dollars? What is that in US dollars? I have no idea. I'm pretty numerate, but I don't think I can easily, in my head, do 2,500 divided by 642.5. I just can't do that in my head very easily. So why would we expect billions of people to be able to do that? But if you tell me my budget is 2,500, and you give me 2,500 Kenyan shillings. And by the way, if I manage to hold on to some of it, I earn more Kenyan shillings. That makes more sense. And it's thousands of decisions like that come from realizing and listening to people on the ground that you realize that you're not gonna come to these insights if you're in the West and not dealing, or if no, it's not actually the West actually. I think that language we need to adjust. It's if you're in an environment where you and your friends have disposable income, because you could be in the global South and you and your friends have disposable income. And again, you might not notice this because you're going to be in your disposable income bubble in the global South. And you might be very familiar with Bitcoin and stable coins and so on and be using those and be doing significant volumes, but not aware of your fellow countrymen and women who are not in that camp. And the same will happen in the West as well, where you could be living somewhere and you have disposable income, which we're all, most people in the Bitcoin space are fortunate to be in that camp, including myself. And so, but there'll be someone round the corner who doesn't have that situation, and their reality is literally the diametric opposite of yours. But because everybody that you know is going to be another bird of the same feather, as it were, your view of the world is going to be based around that. Now, in the West, is the percentage of people who have disposable income is way higher than in the global South, but it's still the same thing. This is a worldwide issue. Medium of exchange usage of Bitcoin is going to be in a community somewhere. My bet will be in a community somewhere where first, it will eventually be everywhere, but the first will be in places where they do not have disposable income, wherever that is in the world. But that will be, it just, they tend to be more frequently in the global South, but it's more about, do you have disposable income or not?
Yeah, that makes sense. And do you think with hopefully the success of Fedi, its continued adoption, like that's what interests me about what you're building and designing for these extreme edge cases, like is your hope at some point over the long haul, one decade, two decades, however long it takes, these economies sort of meet in the middle, like you give individuals in these lower tier economic situations the tools to pull themselves up and coordinate activity and give themselves the ability to separate themselves from the ills of the central bank and governments that control their money and debase their money slowly but surely and sometimes even more rapidly over time.
One, that's my hope, but I don't think it's 10, 20 years. I think actually we're going to see them meeting in the middle very soon.
Really?
So if we talk a lot about these disempowered communities, but even empowered communities, I think that you're going to find people wanting to use something like a Fedi as a very simple spending, lightning spending wallet. It's an incredible experience, and it's only going to get better if you want to. But if you want it where you can choose who is going to be your custodian, you can choose and set up a custodian closer to you or in your community. But the experience is this simple experience that's as simple as using some of these more centralized solutions. You're going to still find that useful. And so you're going to see them both using it in that context. The other thing that I'm really excited to see, and we're already starting to see, and we're going to lean into that, is that you have in the global South all these people and who want to use it as an app to help them manage money, spend money, and eventually form savings. If they're constantly receiving money in Bitcoin, and then they convert it to local currency and they realize that the amount of local currency they get for the same amount of Bitcoin keeps going up, or the amount of Bitcoin to receive the same amount of local currency keeps going down, they will be implicitly trained on the concept of inflation without having to be trained on the concept of inflation. But to service these federations and communities, there's going to be a series of different service providers that will need and will start to appear. You're going to have, you're seeing these public federations starting to pop up, for example. And they provide a service for people who want to store smaller amounts or get started before they set up their own federation. So, I mean, interested to see how that goes. There's something called FediMint gateways that connect federations to the Lightning Network. Federations can run them themselves, but you're starting to see people offering that as a third party service where they can service multiple federations. So the federations only need to, in a trustless way, so the federations only need to, the communities only need to run the federations, and they can connect to one or more gateways to connect to the Lightning Network. And that's another service that we're starting to see. A third one is for stable balance. Someone has to be willing to provide stability in Bitcoin. The benefit of doing that is they are effectively going long Bitcoin, so they can earn a yield on their Bitcoin. But the end users are benefit from having stability for these short periods of time. And again, we're starting to see interest in providing that stability provision. And then finally, all of these things need time and skill to set up and support. So you're starting to, again, to see people looking to offer services where they help people set up stability provision services, or help people set up Fediment gateways, or help people to set up federations. So it's basically set up support services as well. So, and all of these, I think, are fertile ground for people in the West to right now effectively stack more sats by helping communities around the world and in advancing the use case and proof of the use case of Bitcoin as a medium of exchange globally. While, so it's a win-win. They get to gain more Bitcoin while helping people and while advancing the cause of Bitcoin.
Yeah. No, it'll be interesting to see how that side of the market develops, because if you agree that the price of Bitcoin is going to go up long term, like, I wonder if there's a contractual agreement or whatever it may be that you could set up where if you lock Bitcoin in, you keep it there for 4 years. So like, if you're a Bitcoiner and you're thinking like, all right, what are the chances that the price of Bitcoin goes up? What's the time horizon I'm comfortable with? It's like, all right, I'll lock it up and provide liquidity to the stability pool for 4 years. And if Bitcoin does what it has done historically, I should have more Bitcoin at the end of the day for providing that service.
Or you can hedge, and you could, if it's local currency, you could hedge it against USD, and then you're, as long, what's the chance that USD is going to perform better than the local currencies? Like 99.99%, and I still effectively earn a Bitcoin yield. So yeah, there's ways you can like reduce the risk. So you can choose. I just go long and make, but for long periods of time and make a large yield, or I hedge and make a smaller but way lower risk yield, and I can choose to do the two. So yeah, there's just so much stuff, and here's the thing: you're able to retain your Bitcoin, obviously if you provide a good service, earn more while helping communities. And so that's why these two sides are coming together, and advancing the cause of Bitcoin, not just as a store of value, but as a medium of exchange. It's like a win-win-win. And I'm interested to see how that progresses as well.
Yeah. And with this in mind, I mean, everything we're talking about today that we have talked about over the last couple of years, both on air and off air, like, this is something that I recognized immediately when Eric first dropped the MVP of his eCash system a few years ago. I was like, wow, this could be massive. And a lot of people jump forward to the end state possibilities of everything you can do here. But as we all know, particularly if you've been in Bitcoin for long enough, like, managing expectations is important. So with that in mind, like, what would you say in regards to that, just managing expectations? Like, obviously everything we're talking about is possible in the long run, but these things have to be built out. These markets have to be developed. You need user feedback, iteration, all of that. And so with that in mind, what would you tell the audience in terms of where we are today and what the path to getting to these endpoints look like, and what should people expect that to look like?
That's a really good question. Cause it's just, well, I would say that we have now launched, and it's taken about 2 years. I, as the sort of crazy entrepreneur, said it was going to take 6 months, and it took 2 years to get to this stage. But many people, an example was a friend of Eric, felt that this was either never going to happen or take over a decade, based on conservative estimates to achieve. And so the fact that we've got to this point in 2 years is incredible. But the next phase, the market product fit phase, is where we work really hard to find really strong demand in one or two markets around the world. It doesn't matter where they are, but before we go on to like aggressive growth, we want to stay patient. We're building a decentralized super app run by and for communities, which is built completely off freedom technologies only. So an experience like WeChat or Alipay or what Elon Musk wants for X.com, but instead of running by the, you know, Chinese government or, you know, a Silicon Valley megalomaniac, it's run by communities for communities. And this is something that we need to just keep focusing on and know that it will take some time to do. That being the case, our progress is incredibly fast, and every day that goes by, every week that goes by, it will just get better and better and better. Well, let's say every month, just so I don't want to, but you'll see adjustments and improvements every month on an ongoing basis.
Yeah. And I mean, I can attest just the user experience alone. Like once you figure out, and you guys have made it really easy, particularly with the launch last week, to join a federation. Like you don't have to paste codes or anything anymore. You just click and you're in. And the ability to join a federation, hit receive, and then present somebody with a Lightning invoice and get Bitcoin that way. And then when you're spending from there on out, not knowing, not needing to know, maybe you do know, but you don't need to know how that Bitcoin is moving, whether it's within the mint or to a Lightning invoice. Like the user experience is just far superior in the reliability. And
shout out to Eric on that as well, because there's also something called observer.fedimint.org, which is really cool. Which is Fedimint Observer is basically like the Fedimint ecosystem equivalent of a blockchain explorer. So the beauty of the eCash protocol is that you can be completely transparent about all eCash, not all the information at the Federation stores, to anyone in the world. And because it's cryptographically perfectly private to the guardians, it means it's perfectly private to anyone else. So you can actually observe minting of eCash and redemptions and so on for any publicly listed federation. So, over time, this is very early days, there will be more transaction history of these public federations. There will be more public federations, and you'll be able to see them and navigate them and observe. And so, yeah, it's the first blockchain explorer, the Fedimint Observer as well. And so, but this is part of it. On one hand, as a user, you have this really simple experience with the Fedi app, but as someone who wants to be able to observe the Fedi sphere, as it were, and how it's operating, it'll be interesting to see when an event happens, and it will be interesting for us to see. You're going to see the same time as us. When an event happens, how does the Fedi sphere react to that? Just like how does an event happening in geopolitics affect the Bitcoin blockchain, you know, or the mempool, where will be interesting to see as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it will be. And I think it's also, before we wrap up here, we should mention what you guys announced at the end of your launch video last week was the fact that by January 3rd, 2026, the Fedi platform will be AGPL open source technology.
So it's as of May the 4th be with you. We already went source available, but we kept under wraps until the announcement, but we gave a copy of the source code to a number of parties just in case. So right now, from a security point of view, you want to be able to see the code. You can do that already. It was possible from May 4th, and it's possible now. And in fact, the moment we did it, we added something to the Bitcoin blockchain, which was the hash of the letter confirming that we were going over to this this protocol of source available and eventually open source. And it's an interesting block number. I think it was like block 842069, I believe it was, which is a nice cool number. But but beyond that, we will be fully open source latest, and that's latest January 3rd, 2026. If we were at any point as a company to decide to shut down or stop developing the Fedi app, it would instantly become open source from that point onwards, instantly, as part of the terms as well, as a little detail. And also at any point we could decide to say we're going open source earlier. And once we say that, we can go earlier, we can never go later. And if we state an earlier date, that is the new target date. So that will be the absolute latest time. And it could be significantly before that.
That's awesome. It's incredible to see. It's also, I mean, that's one of the frustrating parts about being in Bitcoin, and particularly when new protocols launch, happen with the Lightning Network, still happening to today, happening with the Fediment protocols. Everybody expects it to be this out-of-the-box panacea that works immediately and does everything that it can do right out of the box. And it's simply not the case. These things have to get built. And that has been one of the most rewarding things for me as just an observer over the last 3 years, is that it is getting built. It is getting better. It is increasing user experience, privacy, usability, and it's going to take time. And the fact that we've gotten to the point where you guys have your official launch out in the wild, now you're going and working with the communities to iterate and continue to improve the product. Like, this is a very exciting time. And that's what I would caution anybody listening who reads a white paper, sees like initial protocol launch, and sits there asking, like, why can't it do all the things you said it could do? It's like, well, it takes time to build. And I think what you're building at Fedi and the work that your team is doing on the Fedimint protocol is a testament to, if you spend the time and put the effort in, like, you can actually build powerful products that are giving the world utility that simply does not exist anywhere else, but it takes time.
It takes time, but we have an incredible team, and we're adding to the team all the time as well. We've now started the race, and it's just going to, the foundations are in place, and they're very reliable, and the core foundations are there. So now it's the fun bit, because we now actually gets to open it up to more people. That accelerates the amount of feedback we get, and we can resource up to be able to fulfill the feedback that they give us. So it's just going to get better and better and better. This is the way forward. Super apps are the most popular apps in the software ecosystem. And many of them have billions of users or hundreds of millions of users. They're used around the world, and they're coming to the West. Telegram is transforming into a super app in front of our eyes. And X.com, their stated mission is to become a super app. So it's going to become much more common in the West. But in Asia and other parts of the world, it's already, these are by far the most common apps. And every single one of them are incredibly centralized. We need to put that power into the hands of any community anywhere to be able to run. And that's what we are going to do. We must do it, and we are going to do it. And we are going to NGU. Never give up until we have done it.
Well, I know I said that was the last topic, but, and we don't have to put this in the recording if you're not comfortable talking about it, but the other number, NGU number, go up. As a founder running a business on a Bitcoin standard, what has Bitcoin in the treasury meant to you guys in terms of how it gives you optionality as a business?
Yeah, it gives us incredible optionality. And so this is where I had the advantage of running a Bitcoin exchange for many years, starting above a garage, and very focused on Bitcoin. And after a while, it became clear to me, probably around 2015, and we had a lot of pushback from our investors at that time on this idea. But I just felt that we're a Bitcoin exchange. And so we're effectively a one-way bet on Bitcoin. If Bitcoin fails, then our business becomes obsolete anyway. So we might as well hold Bitcoin. This was a very crazy idea at the time. Because we, and also what we are doing as a business is inherently helping Bitcoin become more of a money, become more proven. So as we succeed, Bitcoin should go up in value by virtue of our activities. And yes, we generate revenues and so on, but if we just did the numbers, the amounts that we can make from holding Bitcoin in our treasury could also be significant. And that was pushed back for probably about a year until we finally managed to get it to agreement for that. We hold a small amount of Bitcoin. And after over the following few years, we ran for nearly a decade, it grew to quite a sizable amount and ended up being a significant amount of our assets in the end, beyond our revenues, our profitable revenues. So that's already was ingrained. So when we had the opportunity in Fedi, we had the same conversation and we realized that we wanted to put a significant amount in Bitcoin as well. The key difference here, though, from the learnings from my previous company is I was really insistent that the core investors that we worked with were people who had an understanding, an inherent understanding of the power of Bitcoin and being on a Bitcoin standard, and people who shared the mission and vision of not just for Fedi, but for Bitcoin and the greater Bitcoin ecosystem. That was key, and that was a learning, so that it wouldn't take a year to agree. And as a result, there was broad approval for this idea. I talked to Jeff Booth, who's on the board, and you know, I was going to put a certain percentage in. His only response is, "Why don't you put a larger percentage in?" And which is like, and I would have, I'm sure it'd have been the same if it was anyone from 1031 or Block or Tramo Venture Partners or anyone else. They would have understood the importance of being on a Bitcoin standard. And so we did that. And it means that we've been able to build a team. We're also obviously very focused on being controlled with our expenses. But even so, we're growing and we've been operating for 2 years now. And at this point in time, we still have, in terms of asset value, more money than the amount that we originally raised in the company, even after all the costs for 2 years. And that's by virtue of what's obvious for someone in this, but outside of the space, not so obvious, but the power of being on a Bitcoin standard.
Yeah, it's extremely powerful. And 1031 is definitely similar to Jeff Booth. Like, why not more? Why not more? it is insane. It completely changes the way founders view, again, the optionality that if you take a long-term view, and obviously you have over a decade experience building companies in the Bitcoin space, and we're able to recognize that with the exchange you're running in the UK, Bitfloor, and apply that to Fedi. Like, it's a secret weapon that many people, particularly outside the Bitcoin space, do not recognize. And if you're really working on a project with very ambitious goals, like the ability to have that treasury safety net held in Bitcoin just gives you the ability to focus on those ambitious goals, which is, again, a secret weapon.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. Anyway, that's where we are. We're super excited. We're ready to rock and roll. And now we're actually racing. We're moving. I don't like to talk too much about what's coming in future. I really prefer proof of work over proof of talk. I'm very, very excited about what we're going to see in the perceived velocity of Fedi over the coming months.
Yeah, I'm as well. Very pumped for you guys. Very proud of everything you guys are doing. Having been close. Like, I remember, I know I'm getting wordy here at the end, but I remember when Justin and the Mutiny guys did the first mint to Lightning Gateway payment in the Commons in Austin, and that being like a magical moment. I was like over their shoulder watching them.
That was amazing.
Execute it from the command line. And that's the type of stuff that most people don't see, that I remember the the feeling of joy that was in that room, because it's like, holy shit, it worked. And to see it a full-fledged super app now, like, it's not easy. And
even before I was aware of Fedi Mint, Eric also did a tweet of the first buying a cup of coffee with eCash in 2021, I believe it was. So you know, there's a lot of history by both of those guys, and also the team that's been supporting them. And my mission is to just work with incredible people and bring this missing piece of the ecosystem out there and be a fully fledged part, which is basically providing this simple integration point and user experience that anyone can access and anyone can use. And if we're not doing a good enough job, let's fork the code and build something better. Either compete, contribute, or comment. If you can't contribute and you can't compete, then comment, and we'll take all the feedback really gratefully, because no matter how it's given, we're very thick-skinned, and it's all going to lead us to learn and improve the product. So we're ready for it. Let's go.
You heard it here first. We'll end there. Obi, thank you. That's all we got today.
Thank you very much. No worries.
Peace and love.
Thank you. Guys, thanks.